evening. This is Mae Brussel, scratching up the phonograph. It's Carmel, California, and this is tape number 354. This is side two, and it's September the 15th, 1978. The New York Times, Monday, October 25th, 1971, carried an important article in quotes, "Informer says that the police prompt radical acts." A long-time informer for the Los Angeles Police Department spun an intriguing web last week of domestic espionage against radical politics. 28-year-old Louis E. Tackwood, a con man, and so forth, helped plan criminal conspiracies and then allowed them to proceed where they endangered innocent victims. Just so the conspirators will be caught in the act, they wanted to make them appear guilty. The police knew in advance that certain black militants wanted to go up to Marin County Courthouse in August 1970 and possibly help some hostages escape. Therefore, they sent up policemen and weapons, and Judge Healy was murdered, and they could arrest Angela Davis and blame them for violence, which they probably had not intended to take place. Louis Tackwood became disillusioned with the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department, which he referred to as a Gestapo, and insists, in quotes, they believe in the total power of police over the people. He said there should be a congressional investigation that would evaluate his impartiality and what he was saying. In recent years, he went into political intrigue for the criminal conspiracy section. He was a contact between policemen and Ron Karenga, also later with Donald DeFries. He worked with Donald DeFries, and he was financed to break up the Black Panther Party and the Black Movement. He charged that the police allowed narcotics to be sold in Black and Chicano parts of town to create dependence on the drug and to undercut thereby the political movement. He charged the police were discussing a plan to foment disturbances at the Republican National Convention in San Diego that would take place next year in 1972, and that the president would have a good excuse for a campaign. He would round up all the known militants in the country. And he was knowledgeable, Louis Tackwood, of the shootout at Marin County and the activity of the police department in Santa Cruz. Now, this is a New York Times story about Louis Tackwood asking for help. What happened was that Louis Tackwood then came out with a book called The Glass House Tapes. If you don't have it, get it. It's put out by Avon Press, 1973. If it's not still in publication, you can write to book collectors and get that book. Because he claims that Ebel Younger, Army general, FBI man, CIA man, set up the criminal conspiracy section that went about then planning these various violences of which that he knew about in California. And he exposed Ebel Younger for setting up the criminal conspiracy section. Now, I absolutely believe, based upon every article I have on the subject, and I'm sure there's even more that we could collect, as I say, if I had the money and the labor and the assistance of people to do it, I want to make it very clear on this tape that I believe that the criminal conspiracy section, headed by Ebel Younger, who wants to be our governor, who's the attorney general now, set up the Manson family with their tentacles and links to the military intelligence, and someday I'll do a tape just on the Manson family. They set up the SLA with Donald DeFries, an agent of a criminal conspiracy section, who met with military people to foment what would later be called a terrorist era of violence that would give Ebel Younger the muscle to become have political clout and become the governor and maybe a justice on the Supreme Court or the head of the FBI, what he wants to be. I believe that the criminal conspiracy section under Ebel Younger, both with Peter Pitches in Los Angeles and Younger as a district attorney and then as the attorney general, set up, as I say, the SLA and the Manson family. I think they were behind the mass murders in California through the use of mind control and psychiatrists of Edmund Kemper. He was a natural because he killed his mother and father when he was little. But then they let him out to spread a scene of terror in the Santa Cruz area, which Kemper claims that persons in the military knew and one particular watched him carry bodies in. The John Frazier case in Santa Cruz was to come down on hippies emblemed them with tarot cards and so forth at the Santa Cruz in the area, that liberal campus that had just been formed, where Dr. Oda and his wife and sons and secretary were murdered. I correspond with John Fraser, incidentally. He's up at Folsom and we correspond. The Herbert Mullen series of massacres was identical to the Fraser-Kemper case, the Isla Vista riots, the San Quentin riots, the zebra killings that preceded the kidnapping of Patty Hearst in the San Francisco area, the Los Angeles stranglers linked to the Los Angeles Police Department, the Juan Corona murders, and I could go on and on with, there were the Bowery bums, the alcoholic, the old men down in Los Angeles, I forget what title they gave them, I'll have to look over my classification of massacres. There has been a series of blood in this state, but it's worse than just using these particular people and setting them up and achieving the terror. What it did was it brought in the LEAA and the various organizations, the police states linked to Washington, and the highest levels of the espionage establishment. By a series of murders, Ebel Younger could form all the transactions he needed. Sonny Barger was another one, working with Washington agents from alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, bringing in the Hells Angels to plow over the peace people up in the Bay Area and create a killing of the Altamont concert that a movie was made with the Rolling Stones, making the hippies appear violent and ending the image of the Love Generation. The California violences have been directly linked to all of these offices. It is just a mess. If you took one by one, which I could do, one each week for 52 weeks, you'd see what I mean. A specific thing that Lewis Tackred wrote about, and I have other articles about, and it is a resume in Glass House Tapes, a part of it, is the bugging of a psychiatrist. The Bay Guardian had an article on that in the summer of 72. There was a psychiatrist at Soledad Prison named Dr. Frank Rundell. At the time of the violence and killings going on there, and a guard had been killed, and Rundell was somewhat sympathetic. He was seeing certain black radicals there as patients. And Ebel Younger wanted these people charged for murdering the guards, and he didn't want Rundell nosing around as a psychiatrist or having any sympathies towards what was transacting. So after a murder in 1971 by a Soledad guard that they wanted to pin on Hugo Pinnell, who I later became very close to and correspond with, Rundell was bugged. A man named Tony Pewitt was bugged to try and frame this Rundell to get him out of the prison system because they wanted to put the rap on Hugo Pinnell and other prisoners. So Tony Pewitt, an inmate who had worked in Rundell's office, was approached by correctional officials, and he said his parole was coming up, and if he would frame Dr. Rundell for conspiracy involving the prison guards, that he would get his parole. And this came directly out of the office of the Attorney General Ebel Younger to frame a psychiatrist who was working at Soledad Prison. So Tony Pewitt was sent out to get the false testimony and frame Rundell. And what they did is they wired him for sound, and I have a photograph of the equipment that they put on him. And they sent him to Pewitt, to Rundell's home, and the men stayed outside. He had a miniature radio transmitter that was put on him, and it was monitored by attorneys, by officials of the Attorney General Younger's office, and they stayed in a nearby car. And they told Pewitt to get evidence to try to link Rundell with the Communist Party or with radicals or with the killings at Soledad, that they should frame him, and then Pewitt would get parole. Well, what Pewitt did was he knew that the car outside with the agents of Attorney General Ebel Younger was outside in the car, and he knew that the house that he was bugged from inside the house close by. So as he was visiting with Dr. Rundell, who he happened to like and had worked with, he wrote a note while they were talking, coming in, "Hello, how are you? I'm fine, how are you?" And he took a piece of paper and a pencil, and he wrote a note to Rundell, "This, I'm being wired for sound, I'm bugged, we can't talk. Let's get away to get out of the house where the car can't follow us and pick up what we're saying." So under the flimsy excuse of, "Do you have Pepsi-Cola or 7-Up, something like that, and Rundell said no, he said, "Let's go in the car and get it," so that the suggestion came from Rundle, and not Pewitt, that he wanted to leave the house and get some beverage. So Pewitt went along with him and then told him what was happening, and Rundle got to the telephone and called the press and got some people to come to the house. And then Pewitt took off his shirt and showed his clothing and how he was wired and linked it to the Attorney General's office in California, Evelyn Younger's office. The result was that Tony Pewitt was released from jail. Of course, it was a conditional parole, but the scandal was so great. And Dr. Rundle was going to sue the Attorney General and the state, but I guess he wanted to live. He was, in quotes, a little smarter maybe than Robert Meyer or some of these other people that were snooping around. But he went on to work in New York City, I believe, in a prison, and he left the state of California, and he never did sue Evel Younger. But that is the kind of thing that was transpiring here in the California prison system with Evel Younger, again, to blame radicals and to discredit a doctor. Now, Louis Tagwood not only talked about the Gestapo, as I say, but James McCord confirmed at the time of Watergate that he was, in fact, afraid of the Gestapo that Louis Tagwood was talking about. And here are men worlds apart, one a white Christian working for the CIA and the military 20 years, and one a black man from New Orleans who had been in and out with the law and is a very bright man, who had warned us that in 1971 there was a man in the White House named Mr. Martin and another man named Mr. White, and that these were his contacts for this secret government inside of a government different than the FBI and CIA that were the Gestapo. And when James McCord was arrested at the time of the Watergate in June of 72, he signed in the jail as Mr. Martin, and the code name, one of the code names for E. Howard Hunt, was Mr. White. And those men were, in fact, those Watergate men were, in fact, working with Evel Younger's criminal conspiracy section with plans to kill Richard Nixon at the National Convention in 1972 and to make Spiro Agnew the President of the United States. That's Evel Younger's office, the criminal conspiracy section, working with Louis Tagwood and people inside the White House at the Watergate. And yet Evel Younger's name was carefully separated from Watergate, and Louis Tagwood was never allowed to call before the House, the Senate Select Committee on Watergate. In fact, in 1973, in the summer, after hearing the testimony on television, I wrote the article for The Realist. The Senate Select Committee is part of the cover-up, and not calling Louis Tagwood, who had foreknowledge of this team and spoke about it in 1971, showed that the courts in Washington, D.C., on wide television, intended to lie to the American people, because if they wanted to know the roots of Watergate, they could have gotten into the tentacles of the Los Angeles Police Department and the allegations of the plans to kill Richard Nixon in San Diego. As a matter of fact, those plans were confirmed by the Secret Army Organization, the Minutemen, working with the FBI. There isn't a thing that Louis Tagwood said out of all of his allegations in 1971 that can be disproven right to this day. But there is absolute proof that the courts are as corrupt as the courts in Nazi Germany, that they will now never allow evidence of guilt of this secret team, not until our Gestapo is fully in place, and then, of course, all the records will be destroyed. If you don't have my article, the SLA is the CIA, you can write to me those articles. I charge a dollar now for my time, and because there's so few of them left, they are rare. It's a dollar, and the postage is 40 cents. And in there, all through those references, I go into the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department and Evel Younger and Donald DeFries. And because time is valuable for people who already have that material, I won't duplicate those connections, because those of you that are serious enough to get these tapes should have that article, and you should have my article, The Senate Select Committee is Part of the Cover-Up, and go into Louis Tagwood allegations also. You can order those directly from me. The whole thrust of the SLA is the CIA article was the fact that after America's first, in quotes, political kidnapping of a sort, it would bring on the excuse for, again, more law enforcement, more police. And of course, I have a press article here. It's in 1964, saying younger charges the terrorists are planning an era of violence. In a campaign publicity move motivated to cause nationwide paranoia and unjustified fear of political disorders, California Attorney General Younger in 1974 is hysterically charging that the left wing are terrorists and that they will upset the anniversary of America, their 200th anniversary, with an era of super violence. That was the 1976 anniversary. This article goes on to say Younger is a major proponent of the death penalty. He's the enemy of black and progressive people, and he is shrill and hysterical, screaming. And along with him at that time was the U.S. Attorney General, William Saxby, calling for a national police force because of so many terrorists in the United States. That's why the SLA had to be created and all these murders created to blame the hippies and the terrorists. Saul Alinsky, the labor leader from Chicago and labor organizer for housing in the Chicago area, had a home here in Carmel Valley in the Highlands. His widow, Jean Alinsky, is a close personal friend of mine. And Saul Alinsky, at the time of his death, was helping Cesar Chavez with his strike against the farm growers out here in the Salinas Valley. Saul Alinsky was walking down the street in Carmel and one day just dropped over dead. And that's how I met Jean at the time, because I had talked on my radio program about these various people that have been falling down dead very quickly at moments, whether in organizing, like helping Cesar Chavez, and of course, Evel Younger as a law enforcement official in this state covered up the expose of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms to kill Cesar Chavez, which was exposed by an agent, Larry Shears, and they were going to use Sonny Barger and the Hells Angels to help them with that job. I have a tape recording of a press conference and the original press conference of the allegations that the White House, a Treasury Department, and that at the time, of course, had Mr. Caulfield and Egil Crow and G. Gordon Liddy and the Watergate team inside the Treasury Department, and they were planning the murder of Cesar Chavez, but that was halted because of Larry Shears. Well, at the home of the Alinskys, some material was taken. Saul Alinsky's keys were stolen, and then they opened up his offices in Chicago with those keys, and there were two men that were recognized for having done the burglary and came forward in 1976. One of the burglars was Jerome Ducote, D-U-C-O-T-E, and he told how he had done work for the CIA and for the Young Republicans, and that he had done dirty work and burglaries on separate occasions, both in the home of Saul Alinsky and burglarizing the United Farm Workers and taking stolen material from that group. He worked on behalf of the farm workers who were directly linked to Mr. Agrario and the Central Intelligence Agency, the lettuce growers. Mr. Ducote was charged with 15 grand theft counts coming from, allegedly from welching on loans, but when he came forward and told that he worked for the government and was doing these burglaries for the government, it seemed that most of the charges were dropped, and we never heard much about Jerry Ducote and the burglaries that he did from the farm workers and in Jean Alinsky's home. But another man named Henry Sherling that worked with him, the second man arrested in San Jose for political espionage, claimed that the FBI was responsible for his activities. This was in February of 1976. Henry Sherling, in quotes, told a Justice Department investigator that he committed 16 break-ins during the 60s in the company of self-confessed political burglar Jerry Ducote, and that they took place in the offices of anti-war people, in Ramparts Magazine, with the farm labor organizers, and that he understood that they were going to the FBI. Things that he stole, he was under the impression, along with Ducote, were work for the Federal Bureau of Investigations. Now, this same Sherling that said that he was working for the FBI and involved with Mr. Ducote in these burglaries also said that his case was dropped because it would affect the election campaigns of Evel Younger, that in order to save Evelyn Younger on this particular matter of these California CIA links to Cesar Chavez and Saul Alinsky and others, that he had to protect the Attorney General of California, Evelyn Younger, and therefore the charges were also dropped. Again, like Nazi Germany, the guilty get off and they're out on the streets. Certain patsies are set up, like Donald DeFries and Charles Manson and so forth. And Evelyn Younger continues up the political scale to the heights of wanting now to be the governor of California. So much to tell about Evelyn Younger on tape. In the remaining time, I'll just give you a few of the headlines of articles I have about him. One, Younger faults the disclosure laws. This is in February of 1974. He didn't think that California should have to give up the information about where the money comes to men that run in the campaigns. In May of 1978, Evelyn Younger is asking for 50 new nuclear reactors to be built in California, and he represents the officials in the State Energy Commission and wants to develop this with Edward Teller, the physicist, even though they don't know what to do with the nuclear waste. And there is cancer everywhere around these nuclear plants have been built, and he's pushing for California to have 50 nuclear reactors. Evelyn Younger, 1977, pleading for political executions. I call these political executions because very often on death row, he mentions 53 inmates that the decision could be overturned, and many of these are political murders, blacks, whites, and so forth. And I don't think that we should have the death penalty as long as we have the Attorney General or the government into the espionage kill plan. Because in Nazi Germany, one way that they could put Hitler in and affect the law courts is to say, in quotes, a person was escaping, such as George Jackson. And George Jackson was as important a political leader for the young people as Martin Luther King or Malcolm X was for other blacks. And by the excuse that he was fleeing or trying to escape, they murdered him. And Evelyn Younger wants the death plea for executions. And he would kill people, charging them with killing prison guards, where he actually, through criminal conspiracy section, brought in people like Lewis Tackwood into Soledad prison disguised as a prisoner to create violence in the prison system. Another article here, file shredding case, not a big problem, Younger says. This was in February of 78. The Los Angeles Police Department was charged with these murders and violence against the people in that city, and instead of being sued for that, they destroyed all the police files. And he said that these 4 tons of records that were destroyed were unsubstantiated charges against the policemen. And the charges from 1949 to 1975, the whole era of counterintelligence, of the military taking over the police department in Los Angeles after the CIA was formed in 1947, moving the FBI and the CIA into the police departments, all of their mischief was swept away with one fell swoop. It was shredded. And Evelyn Younger says, in quotes, shredding the police records isn't that much of a problem. A chief deputy state attorney general, Charles Bryan, had charged that Evelyn Younger, when he was the district attorney of Los Angeles, ordered a murder confession destroyed as a favor to a defense lawyer who had contributed to his political campaign. He says that the information had to do with a murder case in Los Angeles and the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office, and they were going to present a key evidence in this particular case, but that Evelyn Younger had suppressed this information for a particular client. And it goes on to say that the prosecution withheld this evidence and that it was one of the toughest black prosecutors they knew. And right after that trial, Burnett, the black deputy district attorney, again, like all the others, died from a reported heart failure. He was a young black prosecuting a case. The Evelyn Younger had pressured him not to do it, and right after that, he had died. This case involved the defense attorney, incidentally, Joseph Ball, who was a member of Evelyn Younger's club and funded Evelyn Younger. And Joseph Ball is also in the law firm, as I said, on the other side of this tape, with the father of the governor of California, so that this police state Gestapo infests both parties and as insidious. And this was an allegation made by Chief Deputy State Attorney General Charles O'Brien. He was a very fine attorney in San Francisco. He's still alive, I believe, named Mr. Caldwell, who was representing Hugo Pinnell at the time that Dr. Tony Randall was being framed and was a psychiatrist for the black prisoners at Soledad. And the violence was so bad in the California prisons, thanks to Raymond Pecunier and Evel Younger and that gang, that they had congressional hearings about the California prison murders. And Mr. Caldwell, the attorney for Hugo Pinnell, went to Washington, D.C., and Mr. Fish was the man who was questioning him. And I have this from the government printing office, the hearings. And Earl Caldwell was talking about Hugo Pinnell. And he said there was a proposal made to the judge in Marin County, but he was powerless to do anything, to handle anything through the Department of Corrections. You see, we have this continual problem. Even the court orders in Salinas are violated by the Department of Corrections. They claim they are independent from the district attorney or any district attorney or any request by the Superior Court. They operate independently, and they have their own counsel, and they are represented by the Attorney General's office. So even a court order of expression of a request of a Superior Court judge cannot be complied with. If they don't want to, they don't comply with it. They said, do you think your client, Hugo Pinnell, is in danger of further assault? I absolutely believe that. Do you think he's in danger of his life? I believe that, too. I believe that to be a fact, that the Attorney General's office is a court of its own unto itself and the Department of Corrections, and they do not go along with the lawyers or the courts. They function privately alone. That is the congressional testimony of Mr. Caldwell, who is trying to expose the criminal conspiracy section in California that Evel Younger was heading and still heads. Evel Younger, headlines, this was in March 28, 1971. Younger reports on the state probe that there was no Chavez death plot. Now, this was the Larry Shears allegations, and it said there's no such conspiracy. California Attorney General Evel Younger said today they investigated Larry Shears charges, and I don't think that there was a plan to kill Cesar Chavez. And he cleared all these allegations that Larry Shears had made. Evel Younger said they will not probe it and they will not prosecute anybody. And at that time, a Mr. Jerry Cohn, who represented Cesar Chavez, said, I don't think the government did a good job of protecting Bobby Kennedy or Martin Luther King, and we're not going to rely on them to protect Cesar Chavez. When the evidence came out that the Treasury Department was planning to kill Cesar Chavez, Evel Younger cleared that up and said there was no plot to kill Chavez. Keep in mind that the Watergate plumbers, as I say, in Washington were working in the offices of the Treasury Department, and Evel Younger was working directly with them in the Los Angeles Police Department as Attorney General. Not only was U.S. Attorney Robert Meyer fired for investigating the Ruben Salazar death, but October 15, 1970, Los Angeles Times, Evel Younger plans no charge in Salazar's death. They were not going to prosecute anybody, even though just recently there was a payment to the family of about $50,000 because he was shot by Peter Pitches and the Sheriff Department. But Evel Younger, the district attorney, said there would be no criminal charges against the murder of Ruben Salazar, even though he'd gunned down by the police. He worked for the Los Angeles Times. He was a Vietnam veteran and was killed in a cold-blooded manner. Evel Younger said no charges against that plot. Evel Younger's sister is a judge on a court in Los Angeles, and Eric Younger, son of State Attorney General Evel Younger, was appointed to the Los Angeles County Municipal Court as a municipal judge by Ronald Reagan in 1974. So we have a sister of Younger, Mrs. Ziegler, I believe, as a judge in Los Angeles. I never did know if she was related to Ron Ziegler. And we have his son appointed by Ronald Reagan as a judge, a municipal judge in Los Angeles, California. There's no way to sum up Evel Younger. I think you can get by the tone of my voice and the amount of material that I've given you a view of Evel Younger. I will go back next week to the House Select Committee on the Assassinations and some of that information. But if you have any questions or want me to do more tapes on Evel Younger to continue on the crime of Evel Younger, because he's a national disgrace, not over only a state disgrace, I think we could do more on him, because he is one of the most important men, and maybe you should have another tape for your records in case he's nominated to a federal position, which he will be someday. You can transcribe these tapes and send them to the powers that be for the hearings, and maybe they'll be of value that way. I certainly hope we can use this material to stop him. And now it's up to you to take copies of these tapes and send them to officials and get letters to the editor and stop the election of Evel Younger as the governor of California. That's really important, to hold him. And then the next time he's appointed, pull his information out and go after him with full guns, and don't let him get by the confirmation hearings. The man has allowed the guilty to get off and not be prosecuted, and innocent people to be killed, the courts to be overturned. He's worked with the intelligence community in Washington, the Pentagon. He's the epitome of Heinrich Himmler and Goebbels and Goering. And at least you have the cassette that you can say someday, well, May told us so, for whatever it's worth. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll be with you next week.